Welcome to The Yarn, a School Library Journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. Dory Phantasmagory is one of my all-time favorite chapter book series. And up until recently, I thought that after 5 books, the series was done. It turns out, so did Dory author Abby Hanlon. In this episode, Hanlon talks about her decision to continue the Dory series, and she explains how the most recent installment, Can't Live Without You, was one of the most challenging to create. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with Abby Hanlon.
Abby Hanlon, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about Dory Phantasmagory with me. I'm so excited that the new book in the series is coming out. How are you kind of describing this new book to people?
Okay, well, thank you so much, Travis. It's great to be here and see you. And thank you so much for inviting me. I haven't had to describe it to anybody yet. So this will be my first time.
Let's workshop it here.
Yeah. Okay. So Dory, she gets lost in the first chapter on an errand with her mom at the hardware store. And not only does that trigger some separation anxiety, but it also, because she's Dory, triggers some like wildly imaginative fears that her mom is actually going to abandon her on purpose. This is like the weird part and hard to describe. It also sparks some questions about death. And I think for the purpose of this synopsis, I won't go into what triggers that. But Dory begins to kind of explore some of those thoughts and feelings about death after this incident. And she does that through play. So she says to Mr. Nuggy, her fairy godmother, you know, what is it? What does it feel like to be dead or something? And he says, well, I could turn you into a ghost and you could find out. So Dory, you know, they get a sheet, cut some eye holes, and she turns into a ghost, and she begins to haunt her mom, which is really just like a way of stalking her mom, because she's worried that if her mom abandons her, Mrs. Gobblecracker is going to marry her dad, because Mrs. Gobblecracker has already kind of like tried to move in on him a little bit. And so then, because, you know, as when you write books, you have to like take your hero and just make everything like progressively worse for them. Dory finds out that her mom is actually leaving on some level. She's going back to work as a lawyer and won't be home with Dory anymore. And then this like kind of turn of events sort of sparks a larger crisis for the whole family.
Wow. So this all sounds very Dory, you know, like this sounds like it completely fits in with the series, and I can't wait to read this book. Can you remember like how you got the initial idea for this story, or was it like a few different things that kind of came up?
Yeah. So it is always a few different things. But I think with this book, like, you know, there was kind of a hiatus. The last Dory book came out like right before the pandemic. And then I had kind of thought like, you know, maybe I won't write another one. My editor, Lucia Monfried, had retired at Dial. And I just kind of like, from my standards, like I had done those first 5 books really fast, but I guess for other people's standards, that's really slow. But I was just kind of like burnt out of Dory, and I just like didn't have ideas. And so I took a break too. I worked on another book. I illustrated a book for an author, Avery Munson, called Chester Van Chime. I forgot how to rhyme, but anyway. So I just hadn't thought about Dory in a long time. And then it was like the beginning of the pandemic, and I was in upstate New York, and I was jogging every day, and on my route was a dead skunk, and it was just there for so long, and I just saw it over and over again for weeks, and I don't know why, but that like kind of in my confused like pandemic like mindset thought it would be a good start for a book, for Dory to encounter a dead skunk. It's not turned out not to be a good idea, but it's like, I just needed, that was just like my entry point, even though it was sort of like a false start. And so when I entered into a contract, with Dial for book six, I had already written the full manuscript, but I had just told them that it was a book about separation anxiety and Dory's mom going back to work. I decided not to mention anything about the book opening with Dory entering a dead skunk and how that led to kind of Dory fixating on you know, the nature of death. And so I had a brand new editor, Jess Garrison, who I'd never worked with before. And so like, I was pretty terrified at like what her reaction was gonna be to this kind of like death sort of like subplot. And she said, I know that kids are fascinated by death. And I really like that this story like wants to do something with that. But is there another way to kind of come to this idea that does not involve Dory encountering a dead skunk in a tree pit in chapter one? And so I was so overjoyed that she didn't want to just throw the whole thing out and that she was like really kind of like on board to like sort of take this risk with me. But like after, you know, and I think like after she said that about the skunk, I kind of was like, yeah, well, seriously, well, you know, like, what was I thinking? That could be just not a great way to start a book for 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds. But so now that I had like kind of the green light from her, I really wanted to explore that and I didn't want to lose it. And so I just knew that like, it had to be triggered by something funny. And like, that was like such a big struggle with this book was like, how do you make death funny? And so I remembered something that happened when my twins were little, which is that they both actually, I'm kind of giving the book away, but it's in chapter one, so I think it's okay. Which is that they both actually cried when they found out that Mozart had died, was dead. They didn't know that. They thought he was like their contemporary. They had said to me, like, they wanted to go meet Mozart or see Mozart. Like, we had just come from a concert. And I just was like, sort of like cavalierly was just like, oh, Mozart's dead, you know? And that like shocked them because like they were young enough that like, I wasn't trying to keep anything from them, but just like kind of hadn't come up yet that like people die. And they just hadn't watched like those kind of movies yet. And so they were just like in shock and they both cried. And and so, you know, I thought like this could maybe be the entry point for Dory. And so she finds out that Mozart's dead and it was hard. It was hard to do because one, I feel like some kids don't know who Mozart is. And that like, that really made me kind of like pause, like, do I want to do this? Because like, I don't like, my books don't really like push kids in that way. Like I'm not really trying to like introduce like a whole lot of new stuff to them. I want them to feel like they're in on everything. And so I had to, it was just like, I rewrote that part so many times to try to make it like so crystal clear for kids. And still funny. And so I think that like for the younger kids, they might struggle with it the first read, but the adults will get it and the older kids will get it. And it just seemed like a good entry point into Dory, like, you know, asking these questions without sort of like having to like start. I thought maybe it was like better to start with like a little bit of confusion possibly than like something like maybe traumatic, you know? So that was one thing, which is like one like avenue I came to this story was through this, but like the story's really not like, that's sort of just like a subplot.
Yeah.
But like, I think like the other big thing was just like wanting like that I had in my head for a while was just that Dory should, she should get lost. Like, of course she should get lost. Like, she's always in her own world, you know? And that just seems like something, like getting lost is like kind of universal for kids. Like, even if it's just like for seconds or minutes. And like, I'm always trying to find that like, you know, in every book she has like a real problem and like kind of an imaginary problem. And I just wanted to like kind of tap into a problem that was kind of universal. And so I had to also make sure that getting lost wouldn't be too scary, for Dory because, you know, it happens like at the right in the onset of the book. And, I just needed to make sure that like, it would be scary for Dory, but not for the reader. So like the reader would know where the mom was the whole time. And that she's like just right around the corner and like that she could, that the reader could kind of laugh at Dory. And like, I kind of, you know, still had to try to make some funny things happen when she's lost in those moments so that like, I just, yeah, just really like just super sensitive to like taking my readers in and not like alienating them. Like, I don't want to introduce new problems, you know? So then I just wanted to explore like how getting lost would like impact Dory. And because I, you know, both my kids went through separation anxiety at different times. And I think that like a lot of kids go through a stage where they like suddenly realize that like they're really dependent on their parent and that like that kind of comes with like sort of enormous vulnerability. Like that could be really scary. Like before that, you're just like going through life like unaware, you know, that like how badly like your life depends on this adult. And so I think that like when that can happen, like kids start to regress and, you know, start panicking and you know, like whatever, like they could sort of like handle before, like their parent, like being late to pick them up or like them having a babysitter. Like now all of a sudden, like they go into like panic mode and like can be super clingy. And like, that can just be really stressful for everyone. And so I felt like that was like, definitely like something that was like worthwhile to write about.
How do you put your books together? Like once you have those two pieces, the two kind of big elements there that you've described, when you start writing, are you writing all the text? Are you sketching things out as you write? How do you put the book together once you have the main big ideas?
So, okay. Yeah. I start just like, cause I think I just have like a writer's brain. I start like just with a manuscript, you know, just like a Word doc, and I will have like a sketchbook beside me so that like, if I'm really stuck or even it just so sometimes I do draw a little bit, but like if it's a new character, but it's just good sometimes to have a sketchbook just to write the story. Like, just to have notes, like just, I don't know, there's something about just having the notebook that helps to just be able to have like two modes that you can switch back and forth. So with these books, like once I've had a finished manuscript, then I give it to my editor. And then once they like approve it, then I do all the sketches. And so it's like a lot of sketches, but most of them are simple, but not for me. It's hard for me, but you know, there's like 100 drawings in there. And then we take those drawings and then the designer puts them together. And then what ends up happening is that like, once I see it together, then like I redo a lot of it. And that I think makes it hard for people working with me because they thought it was done, you know, but like once I see it together, then I unlock. So maybe this isn't the best way to work. And I think I might for the next book try to do both at the same time and see how that works, because there just ends up being like so much like going back to like with the layout and rewriting. And, you know, I just like when people say like my first draft, my second draft, my third draft, like I don't have drafts. Like I maybe like to actually send to an editor, I do, but like I just rewrite it constantly every day. You know what I mean? Like until the point where they tell me to like that I can't anymore. Like, so it's just, it's, that's like the biggest part. And like, I've heard like some writers say, like, I don't know, somebody said, I don't know who, like, there's no such thing as writing. There's only rewriting, you know? And that's how it feels for me. Like, I have no memory of like writing it for the first time. Like, I just go back in it over and over and over again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do
So
you do
are
that?
you,
Yeah.
I do some versions of that. So
Yeah.
like you're the kind of person maybe where as you're writing out the draft, you're going back to something that you just wrote in the last paragraph and you're making changes. You know, some people are real strict about like, I'm gonna do the whole thing and then I'm gonna do another pass at it. And then so you're kind of like back and forth.
Yeah, well, I just keep reading it out loud. That's like has been the thing that helps me the most is reading it out loud to the point where like I imagine myself like a parent reading it at bedtime and like being like, you know, when you like read a book to a kid but you're not actually listening, but you can sort of like do the like correct like intonation if it's like written well. But you actually have no idea what's going on yourself, you know? So
Yeah.
like I kind of read it to that it's that at the point where it will make sense if you're not even paying attention.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's I think that's most of my process.
Yeah. It's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of like you hear musicians sometimes talking about how they're sort of like tinkering with the album up until the time it's supposed to come out, and they just kind of keep tinkering and tinkering, and it's not really done. It's just has to go out into the
Right.
world finally. So it kind of reminds me of that a little bit. But I mean, the proof is in the results. I mean, the books turn out just so funny, so authentic, and used talking about how like you read it out loud, like you can really feel that when you're, because these books are kind of meant to be read aloud in so many ways. And so it's like it is funny because like so many books are meant to be read out loud, like so many picture books and things, but I feel like a lot of times people don't, authors don't necessarily do that, you know?
That's when people ask me about, I know like kind of the conventional like wisdom is like how to be a children's book author, like read everything. But like I always just say, read your stuff out loud. Like I that helps me the most.
So with the whole kind of Dory series, like how has that been seeing that out in the world? You know, like you it's gotten a lot of great attention and positive praise and things. Like how has that been for you? Like you said that there was a period where you were kind of feeling like maybe it was the last storybook, but then that sort of shifted. So kind of where are you at with that right now?
I feel like I never like would have believed that I could like write like one book, let alone all these books, you know. I don't know, that's such a hard question. It's been awesome, like unreal. It, you know, like really exciting that kids connect so much with the books and like dress up as the characters for Halloween and like I get a lot of letters from kids that like they read the books 20 times and like letters. I guess that the letters from kids like really kind of make the big impression on me because like I was like, oh, I might not write another Dory book. Like, let me see what else I can do. And like, I guess just from their letters, it made me realize like this is my purpose, like at least for right now, you know, that I feel like this kind of is my contribution. And like, you know, illustrating a book for someone else was like a really cool challenge for me, especially like just because drawing and illustrating has been so hard for me. So that it was like just so ironic that somebody asked me to illustrate their book. And so, you know, it was awesome to have that challenge, but I think I kind of realized that like other people could do that too. And like, but like Dory is like kind of like, as long as I can come up with ideas, I think like when I do come up with ideas, I feel like, well, I could just put them in Dory. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I can adjust almost any idea to Dory because they're just like kind of jam-packed. And so it just feels like a good place to like, to put my, you know, put my energy in. And I think like, as long as kids kids like are asking for more and Dial wants more. I mean, I guess there'll definitely be a point where, you know, I should stop. But I think like after this, I'm starting to work on Dory 7, and that's been actually easier for some reason than writing this book. This book was really hard. There were so many hard parts to it for me. I think just because the subject matter was really hard. And I started like, I just don't have, like, I think a lot of creative people, they just like, I don't know if they just have this like confidence that like, they'll always have ideas, but I don't. And so I always feel like, oh, I reached like so much of the books are inspired by my kids. So I'm like, oh, I already like, you know, I already mind that well. Like my kids are 16 now. Like I already like, you know, used all the funny stuff. It's all used up. And so for this book, it kind of like, I kind of had to go back and like look at things in a new way. And like the, you know, like the Mozart thing. And when my daughter was in kindergarten, she had like major separation anxiety, and I gave her a locket with a photograph of me inside the locket. And that ended up like featuring kind of heavily in this book too, is the locket. So like, yeah, it's kind of like a balance of like kind of mining that stuff from my kids' childhood, but also like having the faith that like, I can actually make stuff up too. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah.
It's a little of both. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's an interesting thing, because so much so many ideas were drawn from real life for you, you know? So I could see that being like a little bit of like, ooh, I don't necessarily have that sort of source anymore. So where do I go?
Yeah, totally. And like, I actually like, you know, I've been an author now, like for a long time. Like I stopped teaching when my kids were born. And then like, when they were little, I was just home basically trying to be an author for the beginning. And then I published my first book when they were five. But so I've been an author now, like longer than I've been a teacher, but I still really more kind of identify as being a teacher. And I think like, you know, I know being a teacher is so hard, and it's easy to forget the hard parts, but like, I think on like a day-to-day basis, I think like being like in person with kids is so much more satisfying and than like being at home in your head can be like isolating, and you're just like, is, you know, just the constant question of like, is this good enough? And so I really miss that. And I'm looking for ways to, you know, continue as an author, but also spend more time with kids, and thinking about, you know, how to enter teaching again. And I've been, I was volunteering in the spring with a kindergarten class. And they, you know, I didn't tell them that I wrote books. And so that kind of allowed me to just sort of like anonymously, like eat lunch with them and like go to recess with them. And like, they were so confused. Like they don't know if like I'm a parent, a teacher, a kid, yeah. Like, you know, yeah. It was just so fun. Like just being like kind of like incorporated into their world. And so that helped a lot. Like I think that's why Dory 7 has been like kind of coming out more quickly, just because I could kind of see like, not even just like, it's not like necessarily I'm like getting story ideas from them, but I'm like just remembering like, when you're a teacher, you miss a lot, like of like the little, like all the like little whispering and stuff that goes on, like just like these like minor little like grievances and the little things that happen on the rug. Like you don't get to see it as a teacher because you're like trying to lead, but like as an observer in a class is just so awesome. And yeah, like it, so it kind of really helped me just see like just how hard it is to be a kindergartner, like just like the scarcity of attention, you know, just from the nature of being in school. Like there's 25 of you and one teacher. And so that, yeah, that really helped, I think. And so yeah, that's kind of a good balance for me, is like being with kids and also working on my books.
Yeah. What's your hope for the new book here? What's your mindset when a book goes out into the world?
Well, I think like for the Dory books, like my hope is always the same. That I hope, the main thing is that I hope that kids laugh a lot. That's my main goal, is like I'm trying to make like something funny, like on every spread, you know, even if it's just a little bit funny. And of course I want kids to feel like the new book is as funny as the other books. I hope that it's a book that kids will want to read multiple times, because that's something that kids tell me, you know, that they've read the books a lot, and that I think, you know, when you reread, you get so much more out of a book. And I think it's really important for me that kids relate to the books. And that's why I try to like write about like such everyday things. And I think like with the separation anxiety, I feel like kids might not know that like other kids go through that too. It's kind of like, can be like a private struggle. So I hope that, you know, like that they can laugh at Dory, but also like sympathize with her, and that will like maybe help them like manage their own anxieties. And then I guess the other big thing is like, I hope that kind of like fosters, like inspires their own imaginative play, just because I feel like so many good things come out of play. And that is something that I hear a lot about the books, is that their kids started, you know, playing Mrs. Gobblecracker and talking about Banana Bone and Mr. Nuggy and all that stuff. And the characters in the book, that's great too, but their own characters and just anything with imagining and play. I feel like, you know, imagination connects us, and Dory kind of builds her friendships through imaginary play, but it also kind of allows her not just to have that connection with her friends, but to also be autonomous and independent. And because, you know, you don't need anyone to bring you anywhere or buy you anything when you can imagine and make your own fun.
Thank you, Abby Hanlon, for the interview. Thank you, Caitlin Niefsi, for making it happen. Thank you to my co-host, Colby Sharp. Thank you to Philip Stead for creating our theme music. Additional music for this episode from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.